Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work Plus. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my friend, Robbie Earle. Hope everyone out there is having an absolutely wonderful end of your summer. I am excited to be back in Daredevil world with y'all, and I'm excited to have Robbie here with me. Robbie, welcome to Friends from Work Plus.
Always glad to be back on Friends from Work Plus, and always glad to be talking Daredevil. What a double win.
Absolutely. So here's the deal, guys. If you're just joining Friends from Work Plus, first of all, I recommend that you go back and you can find, I think, 3 episodes, Rob, is that right? Covering Daredevil season 1.
Yes.
So we know that Matthew Murdock has now joined the MCU by way of No Way Home. We know Matthew Murdock will be making an appearance at some point in She-Hulk, which is running right now. We know he'll be making an appearance in Echo sometime next year. And then down the road, we have 18 full-length episodes confirmed for a Daredevil show.
Wild.
So, Daredevil's coming, y'all. And if you want to dive back into more Daredevil coverage, you can binge all 3 seasons of Daredevil right now, actually on Disney Plus, no longer on Netflix. And go back and listen to our episodes here on Friends from Work Plus to accompany that viewing as you get ready for Matthew Murdock time.
Let's go.
Very few things make Robbie more excited than this. Maybe Spider-Man, maybe Captain America. I mean, what is it? It's probably Cap 1 in the MCU. In the MCU, Cap 1, Spidey 2, Daredevil could take that 3rd spot, potentially.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, probably.
So
I think, yeah, within the MCU. I think the other thing is just it gives us, will give us an excuse to read Daredevil comics, which I think are just some of the best. Period. We actually did, if you're just now joining us, we did one comics corner on Daredevil, The Man Without Fear, back when we were going through season 1. But I'm excited to get into more of those too as we get further down the road.
That was in conjunction with his appearance in No Way Home. Little did we know how much Daredevil we would be getting. So this is good timing.
This is going to be a great time, this episode, to talk about the character of Daredevil, period. And I think I'm really excited to get into this with you because people may know this. We had originally planned to watch these sort of at a steady pace in the increments that we were going to record episodes on. So,
True. So
watch the part 1 selection from season 1 and then part 2 and then part 3 and then record the episodes each time. But you got so swept off your feet by Daredevil season 1 that you plowed through all 3 seasons and The Defenders, because I made you, all in what, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
I was forced to watch The Defenders. I didn't want to do it. I was held captive to this podcast having to do it, but I made it through. I love that you bring that up because that was going to be my other disclaimer. This time around, it's a little bit different for me, and I think it's actually kind of fun to have both perspectives represented here. Season 1, I had literally never seen it ever, and you had seen it multiple times. So you kind of walked me through it, and the audience just got my live reaction to that. That's almost never happened on this podcast, right? Either both of us had seen the project we're talking about, or we both hadn't seen it. So this was the first time I remember you being an expert in something, me knowing literally nothing about it, and then walking through that live. That was fun. So that's my last pitch to go back and listen to that season 1 coverage. Because I remember that being pretty fun. I mean, and I think it's fun for you to hear my reaction the first time. I remember texting you and being like, what the heck this? Oh my gosh, this. And you're just laughing to yourself.
Well, and I remember it was also fun to hear you make predictions based on what I knew was going to happen, because we did get to do those, you know, like midway through the season. It was after season one when you really caught the bug, or towards the end of it, when it's like you literally couldn't stop yourself.
And so that brings me to today, in that this experience was different for me because, like you said, I did end up binging all of season two and three, I think in one weekend, literally, which is so many hours of watching television. And then I haven't come back to it since until today. So this is the first time now that I'm coming back to something, knowing what's going to happen and watching it again. And I do feel like my perspective has changed a little bit. Some ways better, some ways worse. And so today will be a little bit different and kind of fun to talk about season two now, which I think is the worst season, but having already seen the entire vision of Daredevil.
Right. And now, yeah, now knowing sort of where that character is left ultimately, and then that he's now being brought into the MCU, like it all kind of creates a different perspective as you're looking at the...
Totally.
Right.
And this is totally spoiler-free. A couple people asked us this on the main feed. I don't know if you saw this, Robbie, because I said that I'm going to get into a Daredevil rant next week in the She-Hulk coverage. So everyone's like, oh my gosh, they spoiled that Daredevil's showing up. That's not what I was saying. I was just going to say that as we're getting back into Daredevil world with this, right, I have some things I want to bring over to the main feed as well, having now seen this and watching She-Hulk, okay? I'm not ruining anything, saying he's there or he's not there or whatever. You'll have to wait and see yourself. But I do want to talk big picture Daredevil for a few weeks here, Rob. This is going to be some Daredevil talk for a while again.
I know. I love it.
I know I've talked a lot already, and I promise you're going to get a chance when we get into the nitty-gritty of this thing to talk a lot more than me. You'll guide me through some of the episode-by-episode things, okay? But I was struck by a couple of really big-picture things when it comes to Daredevil, Netflix, and Disney+. And I want to start there, then we'll go through it, okay?
I love it.
If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, I think it's fair to say that you probably have heard us complain about a few things on the Disney Plus front. We have often brought up the 6-episode format not being super effective.
Mm-hmm.
We've brought up this slightly off-putting vibe that Disney Plus has at times. And we even put out an episode on Friends from Work Plus called What Disney Plus Can Learn from Daredevil.
Right.
Remember that?
Right. Yeah.
And so it's fascinating to me, Robbie, to come back to Daredevil now after Moon Knight, Ms. Marvel, and half of She-Hulk. And here I am back here. And dude, this is going to sound crazy because I love Daredevil and I'm not trying to attack anything.
Yeah.
But there were things watching this that I missed from Disney+. I'm sitting there going like,
sure.
This is going to sound blasphemous now, but in a way, Robbie, don't freak out, okay? This was a little bit of a hard thing for me to get back into. I was watching it going like, do I want to go through another 11 hours of such dark, heavy drama right now?
Yeah.
And not really was my answer.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because I loved it the first time. But am I out of left field here? Like, is that totally crazy to be like, man, this feels like a burden a little bit to put back on?
Yeah. That's so funny. We have not talked about this, but I had...
We haven't talked, period.
I had such a similar experience sitting down to watch the first
one. Did you really?
It was really funny because I was excited to get back into it, like to actually like find it and press play. And then once it started, which we'll talk about when we get into the episode by episode thing, but like the first episode just did not pull me back in. Like it was,
but as you got in, it got a little easier.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited to talk about that, but it's so funny. Here's an illustration that's going to make you laugh. So I've been working on some things behind the scenes in terms of watch orders and reading orders. People know that these are things that I do. And we are, just to give people a peek behind the curtain, not that far from probably needing some kind of X-Men rewatch order that we will probably use on the Patreon the same way we did the Spider-Man movies. Yes, it'll be a bit, but also there are a lot of movies, so we're going to have like a plan ready.
Okay.
So I say all this to say I have been kind of slowly forming a watch order in terms of the, you know, the actual sequence of these movies, but also figuring out which ones are going to be worth watching. And so, you know, just thinking through some things. So I say this to say that I came home on a Friday night and Candace was gone. She's visiting family. And I was kind of like done with work. And I was just like, I want to watch something and just like kind of chill out. And I started to put on Daredevil and was so like, man, I am just not enjoying this, that I turned on an X-Men Origins Wolverine, which is maybe
not good.
like it definitely deserves to be in the conversation for like top five worst comic book movies. And
okay, so let's just pause right there because this is massive what we're talking about.
And by the way, which obviously I'm not saying that, you know what I'm not saying.
It's insane though that we could have such similar thoughts. That's absolutely absurd. I was watching with Annika and I put the first episode on, and I'm not even talking episode by episode quality. And that's what you're not talking. You're not talking quality. You are not saying that X-Men Origins Wolverine is better than Daredevil. Okay, we're not saying that.
Exactly.
But I think in light of the Disney Plus stuff we've criticized, to be honest, I need to reel a little bit of that back because there is a severe lack of just fun and rewatchability that this has that Disney Plus doesn't have. It just doesn't. Even if something is kind of cheesy and goofy on the Disney Plus side, that can be true. But I'm finding myself sometimes missing that now. So maybe I'm just being conditioned into that. But that's how I felt too. I put this on. I'm like, okay, quality-wise, they're doing some really, really cool things. But I'm just like emotionally having a hard time getting into it. And even not just on the quality front, Robbie, I think there's something with the, okay, remove the violence for a second, right? We've talked about that ad nauseum. But remove the actual gore and the violence. Right. I think it's just so much, it's so much brooding and drama and like argument and lit physically so dark that it's hard to watch on a phone. Like that, it's a little bit like you have to be in the right space emotionally when it's a rewatch, right? The first time I think it can catch you. But on a rewatch, like,
yeah,
I'm like, do I want to go here emotionally? Like, do I want to like get fully invested in like the Karen drama? And the answer was like, no.
Well, and what's funny is I remember thinking, and this is something I want to talk about more here in a second. I remember thinking of this season as in some ways the most rewatchable to me, in that I just remembered a lot of good action scenes and it being a little bit lighter, a little bit less heavy, because, you know, I think of season one and three both being these really intense Murdoch versus Fisk, like, you know, slow build to crescendo things.
Yeah.
And this one I always think of as like, this is the one where if you just want to see a lot of kind of comic booky looking Daredevil stuff, then they give it to you. And so, yeah, I thought it was like, even with that caveat, yeah, it was just a lot.
It hurts to say.
Yeah, it's like slow is the wrong word. It was hard to get excited about, maybe, is like I, in that moment, like as I was watching it, I was just like, I need to get, like, I felt like I need to get myself ready to like watch a like straight drama, which is that's maybe what it is, like, in part. And that's not that in and of itself is not the fault of the show. But I will say that, like, I'm generally not in a mood to just go, like, rewatch Doubt. You know, like, it's not a, like, I love movies yeah. like that, but.
Right. Did you even for one split second ever find yourself missing Kamala?
Mm.
That's like, for one second, I just like found myself being like, because that's one of the vibes yeah, you talked right. about, like being just kind of off
right.
at times. I was sitting there thinking like, man, I miss the occasional joke. I miss there actually being some chemistry between the cast a little bit at times. Yeah,
right.
It sounds crazy. I mean, way too harsh, but I don't know. I guess I'm just saying it's funny to me that when we first watched Daredevil season one, I did a lot of episodes being like, wow, Disney Plus needs to up its right. game and catch up to this because this. Now coming back to it, I've maybe conditioned myself more to Disney Plus that now I'm kind of like, well, Daredevil could learn a few things from Disney Plus, to be honest. Like, if Daredevil shows up in She-Hulk and is a little bit more lighthearted, I think that's a positive, to be honest, having now seen this. If there's a little bit better chemistry between Matthew and his coworkers, that's probably right. better.
Yeah.
Seriously.
No.
Crazy. Here's the second big picture thing I want to say.
Yeah.
I also wonder, dude, I love that you chose to watch four episodes and then take a break. And here's why. To me, the first four episodes almost tell a perfect and complete story.
I cannot believe you.
Here's why I want to back. I have chills.
My top note on my page is perfect arc, question mark.
Yeah. And so here's where I want to backpedal on another thing. This on a rewatch is living proof, Robbie. I'm so excited. I have chills. We might have to give this episode out as a freebie, a friendly freebie, because I want everyone to hear this. But I'm now watching and I want to reel back something. This proves that the six-episode format is not inherently incorrect.
Right.
This proves that you don't need 12 episodes to tell the full story. Here's why I say that. Because I only got four episodes here and you could have ended the show.
Yeah. Literally.
Maximum, you could have stretched it out to two more and ended it at six, just like we're getting now.
Right.
Like, I don't need any more content from Daredevil for this show. In fact, when Elektra shows up at the end, I did a huge sigh. I was like, oh, no. Are you kidding? Because I know where it's leading.
Well, but see,
but this is proof. It's not about the length of the show. It's about the story you're telling. And they could have ended this in five or six episodes, and I would have been like, yes, season two is a freaking slam dunk.
Well, it's about pacing in general, though. And that's what I think is interesting, because you're looking at, honestly, probably the same roughly runtime total between six Disney Plus episodes and four Daredevil episodes.
True.
But the difference is, with Daredevil, you have really four stories. You have four endings, right? And that means that you kind of have four, like, points that you're getting to, whereas in Disney Plus, you have six across the same amount of time, which means that it's just going to be inherently, because everybody wants to end on these kind of cliffhanger moments to pull people back in, but to do that across six episodes in some way is, it feels like you're cramming a lot into what's still kind of a small space, because across like not that much time, you've now had six unique little like mini arcs. And I do think that that matters. And I kept thinking, like, honestly, I think there's a, well, yeah, this four.
This is crazy, by the way. This is crazy.
This four was pretty, this story was like, I kept thinking,
yep,
man, I almost yep. wish that
yep.
we could just get something like it's so focused, it's so quick, but it feels so complete, like you said, to where I was like, man, if this were a season of a Disney Plus show, like, well, still, I'm not saying it's perfect at all, and I'm not even comparing it in this moment to any particular Disney Plus show, but it would have felt right. the most focused.
It'd be top tier.
It would be, yeah. Because it just, it, there's not like a lot of extraneous stuff, which I think is another issue that like we can talk about it at a later date in terms of like the tangential questions that come off of Disney Plus shows that maybe Daredevil didn't get to worry about because it was kind of relegated to its own world that didn't affect the MCU. But the lack of that stuff just makes it, yeah, like we're introduced to a threat in episode one that is then beaten in the final episode. And by the way, even if you want to include the final Elektra scene, that would just be like your stinger at the end of the season.
But back to my original point, though, isn't it absolutely insane that there's 9 more episodes to go now?
Yeah.
It totally feels like they wrote 2 stories. That they were like, hey, here's a great story. We could wrap it up right now, but frick, we have to add a bunch of episodes. Like, we have more time to go. That's how it feels. And they're like, well, we better, you know, place a stinger and then follow up on that. Like, you know where this goes in season 2, right?
Right.
It's so weird that, yeah, they couldn't just leave it right there.
I mean,
so I think the moral of the story is, yes, the pacing is important, 1,000,000% more important than any of the specific episode counts.
Right. Yeah, I do think that the showrunners would probably argue, and I think fairly, that you do get some interesting work done with the Punisher character on the back half of the season 2. So, like, I think that they would say,
sure,
you know, because there's a lot more, and then, you know, the Karen Punisher thing, and like some of that, again, I think you can look back and shave some of those episodes out. But I will say, like, but that could still be a later, like in our model, a later season rather than like all of that crammed into one.
Or theoretically, you could make it 6 episodes then and have a little bit of follow-up on the back end or something. I know that might not work pacing-wise with the climax of the story. But yeah, or make it season 3, part of season 3.
Yeah.
Again, season 3 is almost perfect, so that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying before you knew what it was going to be,
right,
you could have done that. I agree 100%. This is so weird that we agree on this so much. Dude, by the way, the end of episode 4, it plays like Daredevil's theme with the full orchestra again, like the end of season 1, and it's so cool. Like, that's very fitting in the ending. They then, like, have a moment of, like, taking a deep breath, reconnecting, kissing Karen, walking home in the rain as, like, the epilogue to the season, right, theoretically. And even if you didn't include the stinger, like, you could have ended it with Matthew, like, drinking his beer, smiling, and that could be the end of the whole thing. And Punisher has that whole speech, which is like a highlight of the entire season, and totally could be the end of the character or like the end of that saga.
And right,
I'm thinking to myself, this is done. Oh, wait, there's 9 more episodes.
Yeah. Well, it feels like a film too, right? Like, I mean, it would be a really long movie.
Yeah.
But like, it feels like it has one complete arc rather than like this series will wind up feeling like it has like 3.5 arcs, if I remember correctly.
It'd be like a 3-hour and 5-minute movie, which is actually not that absurd.
Right.
You're right. They could literally even cut out a few scenes probably and get this to like a 2-hour and 50-minute movie.
Yeah.
And release it. Yeah.
I'm so curious to see how this conversation changes, like even with She-Hulk. I can't wait to talk more about She-Hulk as we go further into that show because it's even changing these things for the better in my mind, in that it's kind of realized a system and a scope. And like, I was just thinking, man, like if we had, like, I wonder if we can start having Disney Plus series that just do this, like what we're saying, like almost what comic books do, where you have generally like a 2-3 issue arc, like at a time. And then every now and then you have like the big events. And I think what's interesting is they've sort of modeled these Disney Plus shows after that, but on a more like low stakes level, which means that they just tell kind of one story that has to sort of feel like a movie, but is also more than a movie. And I guess I'm just saying, like, wouldn't it be cool to check in with a character and just let them have like little complete stories every time? That's like, I don't know. It's like it doesn't have to build into a larger thing necessarily.
Well, and that's what Ms. Marvel would have been without some of the clandestine stuff, in my opinion. That's what Moon Knight was, I think, effectively.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that felt like a complete arc.
Yeah.
A check-in on a character that didn't tie in really at all.
Moon Knight's a great example of that, which is funny because that's the show that came out right after we did that Daredevil Disney Plus episode.
Yeah. Wow, dude. What a way to kick off this Daredevil coverage again. Because I'm blown away that we had the same thoughts on this.
On both points.
I really kind of thought I would be in the minority on that because I know you know that I think the back half of this season is pretty bad, like garbage at times, like with the hand stuff. I know you know that about me. But I was surprised at one... Yeah, how long it took me to get into this again. Like, I just didn't really want to watch it. It felt like a chore. But then, two, by the end of it, there were moments where I got chills, actually, and I was like, this is like a really complete story.
Yeah.
And then seeing the Elektra tag got me so discouraged because I was reminded of, like, oh, gosh, what's ahead? Thankfully, I think season three is literally one of the best series I've ever watched personally, so I'm excited to get there,
right?
But I'm just kind of blown away and I'm stunned right now that we had similar thoughts on this. We didn't talk about it. It's crazy.
I felt the same way. Like, I was like, oh man, I was trying to temper the way that I was going to talk about the way I was feeling coming into this. And so, yeah, wow, there you go. You podcast with somebody long enough.
Yeah.
One general thing I want us to kind of have in mind, I kept wondering what makes a good comic book sequel, whether you're talking about a film or a series. Because as I was thinking about this, there are so many comparisons that I could make between this and other MCU sequels, other comic book movie sequels that have been really well received, like Spider-Man 2 or The Dark Knight. Like, there are things that they always feel like they have to try to establish. And it's funny how sometimes that becomes hugely successful, like with The Dark Knight, and how sometimes that's like the Iron Man 2. But really, like, they're striving for similar things. And I could see so much of that in this series, and it just... It's funny to me how, like, how often it's a miss. Like, yes, there are those, like, acclaimed ones, but, like, this is your least favorite season. Iron Man 2 is generally people's least favorite Iron Man movie. Thor 2 is people's least favorite Thor movie. Now, again, obviously, there's, like, Winter Soldier, and I think there are reasons why those are exceptions.
Yep. Okay, so let's look at that. Let's look at that for a second. Because that's actually something I was wondering about. Like, I was going to bring up Winter Soldier.
Right.
What went into that? Because to me, I think the big change there was it wasn't a running back of what worked. It was a we need to push and reinvent. And like Guardians 2 is too much of a let's run it back and just amp it up.
Yeah. Iron Man 2.
I think that's one thing that was really refreshing about Ragnarok, even though it's not technically the second movie, is it was a we need to reinvent.
Right.
Is that fair to say? Is that one of the things you need to do? Was The Dark Knight a reinvention of Batman Begins at all? Question mark.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was because you look at like even just the aesthetic change from him being in the mansion to the penthouse, like.
That almost feels a little more of a continuation, though, than some of those other examples I just gave.
Yeah, but it is more than Winter Soldier. Because I was going to say the thing about Winter Soldier is it moves Steve into a totally new role. And they were, you know, they had the benefit of him being 60 years in the future or whatever. So, I mean, that does necessitate that it's a bit of a different role. But
Yeah, I'm not bashing Cap 1.
No. But sure. even The Dark Knight, I think you could see how it's going from, it's showing him progressing in his relationship with the city in particular, like going from being this thing that nobody really knows about to being this thing that's now known throughout the whole city and has the Batman light. And like, I think they move that into interesting places because of the Joker. But my point is like, maybe that is it. Like, you have to expand it in just the right way, because you can't do a total left turn, because then people don't feel like there's any continuity. But it's this really delicate balance. Like, I was thinking Spider-Man 2, one of the things that I think makes Spider-Man 2 work so well, and there are hints of here in these first four episodes, is it takes away Spider-Man's powers briefly and sort of like introduces a whole new kind of conflict into the mix, whether you like that element or not. And sort of like that dovetails back in with the villain story to where it's telling a new kind of story about like who Spider-Man is. And I just think that like here we do get little bits of that here at the beginning. And that's why I'm really excited to now to keep watching and to see whether some of this stuff holds up or which direction it goes. And that's why I'm getting into this long, like windy discussion about what a great sequel is because I kind of want us to make note of what we think that requires and then evaluate over these next three episodes, like whether Daredevil season two is a good comic book sequel.
Here's what's interesting to me. As you're saying this, this is where my brain is going. If you had to make a formula for the superhero genre in film, but also I think probably in comic, and you can speak more to that.
Sure.
Would you say that this is pretty fair? The first movie, the origin story, usually has to take a character who needs to be humbled or gets broken down, and then you find them rebuilding and re-becoming worthy, working their way back up to a pinnacle moment where they realize their power and they've worked through everything. If that's the origin formula, then I would argue that the sequel formula is, okay, now this person has their powers. Here's how they struggle with these newfound powers.
Right.
This is now where we start messing with how do they balance their powers versus their other work life,
right,
or their powers versus their personal life, or is it putting those people in danger? Like, I'm just thinking about, like, how much of Iron Man 2 is
right.
That? Like, Iron Man 1's the perfect origin, right? He gets in the cave. He gets broken down. His ego gets destroyed. He has to come out of
right.
it. He re-comes out of it, arises a new man. Now, he's a new man, but has everything in his life changed. That's Iron Man 2. Like, look at all these things I'm struggling with. But, dude, even The Dark Knight's kind of that.
Yeah.
Winter Soldier's kind of that.
Well, Spider-Man 2 is definitely
Guardians 2's kind of that. Spider-Man 2 is that.
Yeah, I think, and that's a great point, because some of the films you just listed are great and some are not great. And it's funny how they all still play with the same elements. I kept thinking of Age of Ultron, because I think one thing that does feel kind of specific to the superhero genre is that the second movie is the one when you normally really get to see the hero or heroes like in their prime. Because the first one, they're all building, like look at Daredevil, like the whole, he doesn't even get in his costume until the final episode. Like the whole thing is him getting to that. And then that's why I think I always think of season two as him actually being out as Daredevil in the costume. Cause that's really the only season where you get that a lot or get that at all beyond like one episode. But that's the same as Age of Ultron to me. Like all of the Avengers is the team coming together. And I think the reason I have like a soft spot for Age of Ultron, even despite its flaws, is that like that's the one where we get that. And you could argue in some ways that like Iron Man 2 is the movie where you maybe get like the most just straight Iron Man action. But that could also be like a double-edged sword.
Oh my gosh, this is a totally separate discussion that's so fascinating.
I love that Daredevil always gets us having conversations about other things that aren't Daredevil.
I also, by the way, I don't think this is a Marvel thing. Sorry.
No.
Sorry. I don't think it's a Marvel thing exclusively. Like, for example, just something that came to my head. Wonder Woman kind of does this.
Yeah.
Right? The first Wonder Woman is her kind of breaking down and then having to realize her powers.
Right.
And then the second one is kind of her struggling with that and like, what does real life look like? And she misses her boyfriend. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
This isn't a Marvel exclusive thing.
No, not
at
all.
In some weird ways, Toy Story is this way.
Yeah, no, true. True. I think anything that has a long enough arc or not. I mean, sometimes I think just a 2-movie series, but I think the reason I say a long enough arc is when I think it's almost required. Like, we've talked about Age of Ultron in this way so many times. You have to look at several MCU sequels or just, again, like comic book movie sequels, because even the ones that are poorly received, like, again, let's look at Thor 2, obligatory Thor 2 reference. The fascinating thing about that movie to me, like with Age of Ultron, is, yeah, like now people, especially now that people are retroactively liking the original movie a lot more than they used to, maybe you look at that series as having a decent high at the first Thor and then a big valley for Thor 2 and then shooting way up for Ragnarok. But the thing is, if you went from Thor to Ragnarok, then it's like you go from him just being like learning this thing and being humbled and finally becoming kind of ready to be the hero that he's supposed to be. And then you meet back up with him and he gets like immediately broken down again and has totally reinvent himself. Like, you have to have that connective tissue of like, okay, this is what the character looks like in their kind of like prime, because you have to have something to sort of look back on if you do want to then move into some kind of deconstruction. And I think the same will end up being true for Daredevil in some ways. Like, yes, season one and season three, if I were to just say like, hey, people, if you want to watch the best comic book television, maybe, or at least some of the best, just watch these two seasons. But aside from the fact that, like, you know, obviously there are plot things that go on that you would miss, I just mean, like, stage-wise, you would basically have him being built up and then torn down and built back up. And, like, that's what people consider to be the really memorable stuff, right? But you can't just do that over and over again, or you're just on, like, stairs. Like, you have to have some level of stability somewhere. Mm-hmm. But that's always the one, almost always the one, not always, almost always the one that takes the heap of the derision from people, which I think is interesting.
So if you need that part of the formula to tell the complete story, and a lot of these things are following said formula for said character development, then it really just comes down to execution, right? Like, what makes Winter Soldier so different from Thor, the Dark World, obligatory Thor 2 reference? What makes it so different then? And I'm thinking to myself while you're talking, it's mainly execution and maybe finding little ways to subvert that trend. Little ways.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things that was so effective about The Dark Knight, yes, it was following the trend in that Batman is probably the strongest he'll ever be in that movie, the most advanced with his tech. But all his strength wasn't going to be the game changer anyways.
Right.
So it was interesting to watch the strongest person have to win with like his mind and not his strength, kind of.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think the other interesting thing there, obviously, with The Dark Knight is the Joker character. And the reason I say that is, as I'm thinking through even Winter Soldier and The Dark Knight, like, I think what you have to find a way to do is both find this like fully formed version of the character, but also put them against a really fresh, really different external force, whether that is an actual villain or a circumstance. So, like, with Cap,
which is also, by the way, why I Bucky in Winter Soldier, I think, is an effective way to do that too.
Yeah,
because it's like we have a different emotional tie to him. That's kind of what makes that unique too.
Right, and even the Pierce thing is unique because it's now Cap having like in the first Captain America movie, he's going against like a literal Nazi that has like a bright red face. Like it's very clear that he's the bad guy. Whereas in Winter Soldier, he's going against the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. and it's all subterfuge and like it's a whole different kind of problem that we've never seen that character have to tackle before.
Okay, boom. So then let's transition back to Daredevil because I think that's what I'm feeling. The first four episodes of this season are an almost perfect sequel because the Punisher is that for me. Like we get the drama of like Matthew now wrestling with his identity being known by Foggy and what that means for him. And does he need to be careful, watch out for his friends? We get all that. We get all the typical sequel things. And I think the Punisher is some of the best stuff in the entire season because it brings up this entire new conversation for Matthew about when to kill someone, what not to, what's more effective in stopping crime, et cetera. And that's where I'm like, man, this is basically perfect. So that's where I'm like, they did make an awesome sequel.
Right, right.
Four episodes in. But then it just goes off the rails with all this other stuff that feels filler, et cetera. But that is a fascinating thing to think about. How this compares as a sequel, I love that you brought that up. Other sequels, what goes into them, and now just me putting together, like, it does have a lot of the makings of, like, what The Dark Knight has, but we're only four episodes in. That's where they lose it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, yeah, I'm so interested now to get to the second chunk of episodes, and that's actually, it's a perfect transition into our kind of episode-by-episode look here, which We'll be brief, but I think, yeah, you're right. I mean, whenever I think about what I love about this season, it's Punisher stuff. And whenever I got to episode four and it was over, and I was like, I just got a lot of the moments that I remember really loving, I was like, oh no. Like, now what is the... Like
what's left?
So what I want to do real quickly.
Yeah. Okay. Let's pause episode 5 through 13 talk now. We're going to get there.
So let's do this way and sort of half rapid fire, but obviously to the extent there's something that we want to talk about more specifically, we can. But I was thinking, you know, we went through four episodes. Let's spend a little bit of time on each episode and tell people our high point of the episode, because I think we're transitioning to a point now where we're not just going back and reviewing things. I think we're going to also be looking at how the story could kind of move forward. And I think it's nice to focus on like the high points and what we would like to kind of see carried forward. So a high point of each episode.
And look, just full transparency, you and I cannot afford to spend an hour on each episode. Right. I can't do 13 hours of season two like we would for She-Hulk or something. So this is going to just be a brief look as we're kind of binging the entire series.
Exactly.
I just have to be honest there.
Exactly. And so high point and FFW grade for each episode. So
we'll any low points or not? Low point?
So I thought about low points and then I was just like, man, I don't really feel like talking about low points right now. Like,
well, I'm still bringing mine up occasionally.
No. You can bring up things that you're not into, but I was like, right now I'm just in a headspace where I was like, I would rather figure out the best parts of this that I love and dwell on that and just hopefully enhance it for other folks. Like sometimes I really feel the need to delve into these things. And tonight I was just like, you know what? People know the things that didn't work. And this show has been out for a long time. People don't need our review of it to know whether they should go watch it. So
yeah, true. Hopefully they're watching along with us anyways.
True.
Yep. Well, okay, Robbie, sorry. Literal last thing before we say everything from episode one.
Yep.
I would just add that two things hit me right away off the bat when I got back into Daredevil world. One, I'm going to reiterate something I've said on TikTok a million times. I've said on Instagram, John Pisano needs a shot at an MCU movie.
Oh, yeah, man.
If John Pisano doesn't get the Daredevil gig, this is one case I'll be very disappointed.
Yeah.
I think it's between this and his work on Spider-Man, the PS4 game, I think it's kind of a shame he hasn't gotten a shot, to be honest.
Dude, he does not. Yeah, he doesn't miss.
Elite at points. And I know people think that we say that about every composer, but that's not the case for me. I'm saying, like, in the MCU, like, his Spider-Man PS4 game would be, like, a top 5 score in the MCU for me. So yeah. I think he deserves a shot. And the second thing I was going to say is, dude, I know we've talked about this at length in the previous Daredevil stuff. I know you've told me this from the comics front. I know that Daredevil and Spider-Man run together a lot in the comics, and it is a connection I need in my life. I need it. Yeah. Ever since I saw No Way Home, but now rewatching this, there are so many Spider-Man parallels. Yeah. That's what I wrote in my first note. Just because, like, even the music with the arpeggio strings, again, because yeah. it's the same guy from the game and here. But, like, it's like him not wanting to kill people, him right. kind of, like, coming in to help other people and save the day
right.
via helping and not vengeance. It just feels so Spider-Man-esque, and I need them to meet up in the MCU. Okay, end of rant. Let's get into it.
Wow. No, love that and agree. I'm excited to talk about some of that, too. Here, actually, in this first episode.
Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/get started for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
The first episode of season two is entitled Bang. It's directed by Phil Abraham and was written by Douglas Petrie and Mark O. Ramirez. Petrie, you'll remember, had done a lot of the kind of hand type stuff in season one. And he shows back up, I believe, in The Defenders. I think that was the connect we made last time. Mark O. Ramirez. Oh, yeah. He also wrote several episodes of season one. So a lot of season one, season two continuity, more so than there is with season three. But we'll get into that later. The cast for all four of these first episodes will be the same, so I won't repeat all this. But here we had Charlie Cox, Deborah Ann Woll, Eldon Hanson, Toby Leonard Moore, John Bernthal, and Elodie Young briefly. I think I said that correctly, but I'll figure it out. As Elektra at the very end of episode four. And as you already said, we have John Pisano returning as the composer. So,
P.S., we interviewed him. If you're interested in hearing that, you can find it on YouTube, our website, our podcast, etc. It was a cool conversation.
Which you should go listen to because, yeah, it was really fun. So here in this first episode, just as a refresher, it basically opens with a brief kind of here's what Daredevil's been up to. Felt very reminiscent of The Dark Knight. Of that scene where he kind of busts the Scarecrow, but mm-hmm. a little smaller scale, just like this is him out. People now know that the devil's out there and they're kind of afraid of the shadows. And so I like that they gave us that. We'll talk about that more in a second. And then basically we have introduced to this, we see the first gang taken out, which kind of culminates in the introduction of The Punisher and Grotto being a client now that's a victim of this gang violence. But then The Punisher is kind of the new adversary that Matt is after as Daredevil. And the episode ends with him getting shot in the head, which as endings go is fairly dramatic.
Yeah.
So that's episode one.
Yeah, I think the two high points for me in episode one are being someone who knew literally nothing about The Punisher, I did buy into the hype of it being like a military gang. Like, I didn't know what was about to be revealed. Nice. So I thought the way they slow play that was pretty cool because they don't even say Punisher in this episode.
Yeah.
And you don't even know that it's one man until the very, very end.
Right.
And the dread they kind of build that way, I thought was very effective. And by the way, you may not even remember that because it's been so long since you didn't know what the Punisher was.
True. Yeah.
But for me, I had no idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
Wow.
Secondly, the showdown at the end is pretty cool. And that just leads me to again reiterate that the action in this series is still top notch.
Yeah.
I hope that other MCU films take notes on just even how some of the fighting is shot and choreographed. Holy balls, it's cool at times.
Yeah. Especially, I thought, in like episode three and four of this first batch, just since we're talking about the action.
It's so over the top and I love it so much.
Yeah. It's funny though. So I had like, and I thought about this when we were kind of having our Disney Plus conversation again at the top of the episode. I had this this interesting thought that I don't know if I like will forever stand behind. But as I was watching it, I was like, I've always praised Daredevil for the way it does the action, for how kind of realistic they attempt to make that. And, you know, I know that Charlie does a lot of that and obviously a stunt guy. But it's so funny as we're kind of talking about, oh my gosh, what is Daredevil going to look like in She-Hulk? You know, as someone that has now like read so many Daredevil comics, and to your point, you know, he's so often associated with Spider-Man, there is a part of me where I'm like, I don't ever want to lose this, like the gritty, like the real, like this is visceral kind of vibe that you get in these like Daredevil fistfights. But I think that I would like to see a little bit more like acrobatics from Daredevil. Like we get some of that, but it's always more like in a way of like a drop kick or something. Whereas like again, like the Daredevil comics fan in me, which I'm not saying anybody else has to be or has to want this, but like you always see Daredevil doing very similar kind of moves to what you see Spider-Man do. Like a lot of kind of like contorting in the air, and like it, because it's this whole idea that he has like such total confidence in his like radar senses and all this stuff that he like, that's the whole Daredevil name. Like he doesn't, he's kind of swinging out like a crazy person across the city on his like billy club thing. And I'm not saying you have to go that far because he doesn't have the kind of like superpowers that Spider-Man does. But I was watching this, like I really like this action, but I do feel like I'm always talking about how Disney Plus does too much stuff that feels like kind of maybe CGI over the top or too cartoony. But I was like, I would take a little bit of Daredevil, like having some added like pizzazz to the fighting, but that maybe would have to go a little bit beyond what you can do through straight stunt work.
This is the first seed being planted of a really fun but still nutritious conversation that we're going to be having about Daredevil. And just like a TED Talk to our audience about what you can expect from your Daredevil character. And you slightly taking the comics perspective of like, look, there are things that they can still do from the comics that are comic accurate that would still make him different than this show. So just let's open our minds, okay? Let's widen our minds, get our mind right about what Daredevil can or cannot be, but also should or shouldn't be, okay? We're going to open those minds. My only other note here is I do think Foggy and Karen are slightly improved from season one. We talk about that a lot. But my low point in the episode is I thought of you when she says like, hey, at least we have each other. She brings that up again as if they like go way, way back when they have no money. And I immediately am like, you guys, I don't buy your chemistry perfectly. Yeah. That's my episode one coverage.
Fair. I would probably have a similar low point. I wanted it to be a bigger, it was a step up for me. I wanted it to be a bigger one. And that's kind of through all these first four episodes, honestly. So that's something else I probably won't have to say again, but I'm with you. My high point was the final shot here. All four of these episodes that we're talking about, I thought actually had pretty fantastic endings. And the him just getting shot point blank and going over the edge of the building is like, can you imagine if this were a show that were coming out weekly?
Yeah.
Instead of just the dump. Like, because I remember I saw that and then just, you know, Netflix automatically goes to the next one. But like, man, what something else to talk about. But anyway. So yeah, my grade.
I also thought about you as we were going through this because I was thinking about how we talked about the Shock Factory, you know? And I'm thinking, man, I'm watching every guy get holes blown through them, guy get a freaking knife into his eyeball until his brain gets crushed, and yet they won't say the F word.
I know.
Or like they won't kiss. So it's like if you were ranking it, you'd be like, language is mild, you know, moderate. Right. Sex is like non-existent. Nudity, nope. But violence, off the charts.
Yeah, just off the chart. It's so funny to me. Okay, so my grade here, and I went back and forth on this, but My grade for this one was a let's go minus. It's just because it did take me a while. Like, I didn't finish this episode super, like, until the very, very final scene, which is why it's my high point.
Okay.
I was not really sucked into keeping going. So I think a let's go minus for me.
Yeah, I think same. I might even go that's fair plus one step below.
Yeah, that's what I was debating. But you know, I think it has episode a lot of two. The ingredients. It's just, you know. Episode two, again, we have the same cast returning. This time, Marco Ramirez and Douglas Petrie also wrote this. It's funny because online their names are flipped between the two. So it looks like different writer teams, but it's just the same people. And again, directed by Phil Abraham. So same teams kind of across the board. This episode basically opens with Foggy finding Matt. He's been shot in the head and they kind of have an argument that's classic them about this is too dangerous and he's going to get himself killed. And
right.
And then he says that he has to go back, even though we find out that his suit, which he had built based on his experience with Wilson Fisk, is now compromised and, according to Potter, not going to really provide much protection at all. He goes back up against Frank. Not only is his suit compromised, but also, kind of going back to some of that Spider-Man 2 stuff I was saying, we have this thing in this episode where Matt is losing his hearing. And yeah. So he's kind of like doubly vulnerable, goes up against the Punisher, and is, again, basically taken out. And that's the end of that episode. Meanwhile, Karen is kind of slowly on the trail, finding out things about who this Punisher person might be and how they would be motivated. And Foggy is figuring things out with the DA's office.
Just to reiterate my previous point, my second note in this episode is Guy is super military, comma, he's killing gangs. And I wrote another arrow that says, do I know him? Question mark. Oh my gosh, the Punisher. And that was my whole point. It's like literally the first time I took these notes, I did not have any idea what they were even talking about until I heard that name. I was like, I've heard that before. So again, just to reiterate how little I knew.
That's really fun.
I think my two high points. One, I really enjoyed seeing Foggy starting to get some growth and a little bit of badassery in specifically him standing up to the DA. I thought that was a pretty cool scene. Foggy is really just kind of the joke character in the first season. So to see him start becoming a little bit of badass was cool.
Yeah.
Then my other high point, and it's also my low point, okay? Hear me out. Ooh, okay. Is I love that one thing that distinguishes the Daredevil character from other comic characters is just that his superpower seems to be that he can take a beating. And I kind of like that. It's different to me than a lot of other characters.
Yeah.
It's not like Wolverine where he regenerates his health. You know, right. That's a little different. I like that they really lean into the boxer thing in that, like, his superpower is that he's going to get the crap beaten out of him, but he's still going to hang in there. Even the fighting style, I like how it's pictured because he'll get hit. He'll get knocked out. He'll get a bloody jaw.
Right.
And he'll still, like, keep going. And that's fun for me. Now I just got to say, the low point for me is about this time / it's going to get accentuated in about 5-6 episodes. And then again in season 3, I start thinking to myself, are we retreading the same story beats? Like, at what point, like, how many times through the course of these 3 seasons do we see Daredevil gets beaten almost to death? He's barely revived. He's so frustrated about it, but feels like he has to go do it or no one will do it. And his friends are going to argue him to death why he shouldn't do it. Do we do that a lot of times? It feels like we do that like 8 times.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a very fair criticism.
So there you go.
I'm genuinely excited to get more into this because I feel like so much of the series, particularly this season and parts of season 1, run together for me. Like, the hand stuff in season 1 kind of runs together with the hand stuff in season 2. And so I just can't really remember which beats are all repeated and which ones are, I'm just getting mixed up. But I feel like that's the case a lot with the show. Like, there are just a couple of things that they do several times and maybe like one time more than they needed to.
Which just takes us back to our very original point, right? This show could be perfect almost as a movie or at minimum just trimmed down. Really almost all three seasons. Season three less than the others. But they all could afford to be a little tightened or less a series, if you will.
Yeah, for sure. My high point here was that scene, or scenes rather, where we see Matt without his hearing, because I just think Charlie Cox plays that really well. Like the scene of him against the wall yelling and not being able to hear it, I thought was a really, really great scene, because it's like it's such a reminder. Like you were just saying, he's the guy that can take a beating, and then we've seen him kind of be able to overcome whatever. But this is the thing where it's like, you see him really panic, like he's the man without fear. But like, if he can't hear anything, then he's like totally like he's in the dark, actually. Right. And so like, I actually like how much they explored it too. Like, it got him back into trouble with Frank. He should have known that he wasn't in a position to do that, which then kind of justified the Punisher being able to get the better of him twice. Like, it, because otherwise I would start to be like, all right, like, come on, like, you're Daredevil and you've got this like crazy body armor. This guy shouldn't be able to like continue mopping the floor with you. But I like that one, he kind of, the first time he's just overconfident, I think. The second time he's like even more compensating for these like real vulnerabilities we talked about. And then the third time, which we'll talk about in the fourth, he's like finally kind of back and operating in the way that we're used to him operating. But I really like the way that they dealt with the hearing and the way that they actually executed that. Reminded me of the Hawkeye episode that we liked so much, when the hearing aid's out. So that was all really great stuff. So my grade for this one was up to a let's go proper. Leveled
Fair.
Up a tad.
Same for me. Yep, same. I'll go let's go as well. A nice. Step up.
Okay, now this is where it gets really fun, because these are the episodes that I really, really enjoyed this past time around. And so the first one is New York's Finest, written by Mark Vanderheiden and directed by Mark Jobst. So this episode is the one that opens with him in chains.
Then he has the conversation with Frank on the rooftop. Meanwhile, Claire is back. So we get the ER side of things. Yeah. Haven't seen her in a while. Foggy kind of de-escalates a gang fight in the ER. The grotto stuff is kind of coming to a head.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank has actually now chased him down and has him on the roof. And then the episode ends with them fighting down that stairwell and Frank being knocked out.
And Karen realizing that there's this head wound that Frank had suffered.
Right.
Which was another great ending. Right. I'm telling you, all four of these endings. Just lingering on the x-ray shot.
And I wrote that. The ending skull, what does it mean? Again, I knew nothing, so I didn't know what we were talking about. One really obvious high point for me. The conversation with Frank on the rooftop.
Man, so good.
Is some of the coolest television, man. Like, just the morality discussion is fascinating to me. Because my wife hasn't seen this, right? And she's watching me watch it, but just not really paying attention. Uh-huh. And she's asking me questions like, how do we feel about this Punisher guy at this point? And I'm having to check in with her. And I'm like, as I'm describing it to her, I'm realizing, okay, I'm speaking how I truly feel. Which is like, I'm like, you kind of like him a little bit, because he is doing something that he thinks is just. And he has a really traumatic past that you start connecting with. But he's obviously killing a bunch of people. And, you know, that's the Spider-Man debate. Fascinating.
Yeah.
And I love that discussion. I loved it. I love that part.
I totally agree. I mean, that's one of those scenes that whenever people are like whenever you and I have talked and you're like, season two, I could kind of, you know, is way down for me. The one reason I always have to be like, okay, but with this season is these scenes between Charlie Cox and John Bernthal are fantastic to me. At least the ones in this first episode, Again, I forget exactly how some of the later things shape out. But yeah, I mean, John Bernthal.
Yeah, he's great.
Kills it. Like, absolutely
he's
kills
like
it.
The most perfect Punisher possible, like a soldier.
And it's so great because every version of the Punisher that I had seen depicted prior to this lacked the kind of vulnerability that Bernthal brings.
Yes. Okay.
And that's what's fascinating. Key to actually liking that character and not just being totally 100% turned off by him is it's like you, I mean, again, and we'll get into this more next episode. Like, there are scenes where it's like, yeah, you fully understand. Like, you.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
The delivery and and I think he just brings out really great stuff from Cox as well.
Well, and the climax there with Matthew waking up with the gun duct taped to his hand and making him shoot the other guy. But when Grotto starts actually telling his story, you're like, okay, this guy is an absolute loser.
Yeah.
He's a horrible human.
And
so you understand Punisher's side of it.
And the way, again, that Bernthal looks at Cox while Cox is hearing that news, like the performances there are just so good. Because you can only see so much of his face.
He's like, stop talking. And then he's like, oh, when he finally admits that he's killed people.
Yeah, I mean, what did you do line. When it's just like, and it's, I mean, and even the added layer of that scene of the fact that that's his client, obviously, like that's such an interesting dynamic of like Daredevil. Yeah. It's the person that he's been hired to defend and he's trying to literally physically defend him in this confrontation.
I also, Robbie, just kind of love the subtle detail. Did you catch this? When he's fighting his way out the elevator, he pulls the trigger on the gun and there's no ammo in there.
Right.
And he laughs about it.
Right.
I'm still processing like what that's trying to tell us, but the Punisher only gave him one bullet.
Yeah. No, I love that too. By the way, another thing that I liked about this episode, there's a scene like that when he fires at it where you kind of see him looking straight on with the gun. That is a classic Frank Miller comic cover that is iconic because it's so striking of like Daredevil pointing a gun at the reader and it winds up being sort of a misdirection. In the comic, it's this whole thing where he's sitting in Bullseye's hospital room and he's playing roulette and trying to decide whether or not he should kill Bullseye because of all the people that Bullseye has killed and maybe will kill again if he ever gets out. And so it's very similar to the conversation that they're having here. So I think that homage was really intentional. In the end of that comic, you find out that the gun was never loaded. And so that's why it was all kind of a misdirection is, you know, he's still ultimately Matt. He's not someone that would do that. And so I feel like they were kind of just
interesting.
Just an Easter egg, like nothing huge, but
okay.
You know, kind of, if you know, you know.
Going back to what you said just a second ago, you said that you push back to me saying that season 2 is terrible because of this stuff. And dude, I totally agree. If season 2 ended at episode 4, I'd say it's a let's freaking go probably.
Yeah.
Or a let's freaking go minus. I definitely already said it'd be top tier. And again, that just puts an emphasis on how important the ending is because a lot of times that's what sticks with you. Like that's what's the last thought in your head. And it's kind of why, like, I view Loki really fondly, right? How it finished was so strong. It's going to influence that. I'm so thankful The Office wrapped up so well after 2 full seasons of kind of being down-ish, you know?
Uh-huh.
Whereas, like, Lost, you always have that ending where people are unsure about it. So you have to always kind of defend it and fight it, even though 5.5 seasons of that show was absolute magic. Anyways...
Right.
Yes. If it ended here, I would say this is amazing. There's some really good stuff in season 2 here. So I think for me, this is like a let's freaking go minus probably. Still a few things that aren't quite the very top of this for me, but it's been a linear step up each episode. And I found myself getting more and more invested with each episode in season 2. And then last thought, man, when they do put their effort into the action sequences, like the fight down the stairwell.
That's what I was going to say. Yep.
The only parallel I could think of in the MCU is that Winter Soldier Bucky breakout scene.
Uh-huh.
you know, in the stairwell, which felt very similar to this. But I do hope that there is a little more of this that comes into the MCU with things like this and Blade, or I don't know.
Yeah.
I would not mind just a sprinkle more of this vibe into certain projects.
Yeah.
Not all of them, just certain ones.
Well, and I actually saw in kind of doing some light research for this that, you know, this was obviously each season has the big hallway fight moment. And this was this season's. And I thought it was really fascinating because the first season, the way that they do it all is kind of one shot, is they had like a rooftop camera. So it's like moving along a track on the roof to be able to follow him the whole way down. And here, apparently, they actually, to pull it off, had to hand the camera off to different cameramen. So it was like moving and other people were grabbing it and walking with him as they were doing all the choreography, which I thought was really cool.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, I mean, because I wanted to say that because we always, you know, sometimes we request that or point out the lack of kind of like going the extra mile, doing the hands-on thing. So I thought that was really cool to read about.
Sure. Your grade?
My grade is a straight let's freaking go. I really liked this one. I just loved that the Frank stuff and that hallway fight so much that I honestly don't even really remember that much of what happened with like Foggy and the DA and Karen and Claire. But I loved the Daredevil Punisher stuff. And so, yeah. Episode 4
is where I reserved my let's freaking go.
Nice.
I saved it for episode 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause, you know, so episode 4 now is where the Punisher must be stopped. The new Irish bad guy shows up, stabs the guy in the freaking eye, and he is now on a manhunt for the Punisher. So they're shooting random people. They're trying to catch him. But this is also where you start getting a little bit of the Punisher's backstory. Karen is exploring his house. You're finding out that the Punisher had a family that was killed.
Uh-huh.
And in this manhunt, little parts of that are revealed, including sitting by the carousel, where you learn why that had significance. But the Punisher is also caught in this episode, and he is tortured. And it's really graphic.
Yep.
And towards the end of the torturing, Matthew Murdock shows up and helps him escape. They work together, which is a big deal. And finally, the episode climaxes, in my opinion, in both of them kind of bleeding out, well, more Punisher than Matthew, but Matthew also hurting, and just taking a really extended scene, to be honest, like a 5 to 7 minute scene of no music and the Punisher explaining fully to Matthew why he does what he does.
Yeah.
And that's the high point for me. The high point is that whole speech. I just don't think that currently in the Disney Plus era, there's been too many times where a scene of that length has been allowed,
mm-hmm.
right? We're so concerned about the pacing moving. It was kind of refreshing to me to have, and I didn't time it, but a full 5 minutes of just a really emotional story that Matthew says, I think nothing. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not even sure he says a line. And there's no music.
Yeah.
And it's just John Bernthal telling a really heartbreaking story, and it works for me. It really works for me.
Yeah.
And Matthew finally having a chance to show another side of him, which is the really, really sympathetic, compassionate side. Just a special scene for me. And
yeah,
probably the main reason it's a let's freaking go.
Yeah, I mean, this is for me, it, like probably verging on a let's freaking go plus, which I know is crazy. But since it's just a limited thing and there, you know, again, that's the whole conversation about like reviewing these things as broken up entities. But like, it's a let's freaking go again. But like,
and you're going to hear some missed opportunities from us coming up.
Oh yeah. 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 Again. Some. And I'm not officially going to jump up to the plus cause that's real sacred territory, but this is like,
dangerous. That's dangerous up there.
But this is on par, honestly, like with, on its own, so many of my favorite MCU projects. Like, just the performance, just the Bernthal performance in that conversation alone is, like, honestly, one of the only actors that I can compare that to in the MCU is RDJ, in terms of, like, the way he conveys this emotion in, like, it's so carefully measured, but it's so moving, but it's not, like, it's not over the top. It's, like, exactly, like, the performance is pitch perfect, and it works so well. And, again, the way that Cox is responding to it, where he's, like, smiling at first because it's a sweet story, and then you see his smile falter whenever he's realizing, like, where it's going. Like, it is incredible. Like, absolutely incredible. One of the most moving scenes.
Here's one thing that works so well about it to me, Robbie. Frank is not a character that has asked for any pity or sympathy to this point, right? Like, he has never played the victim card through 4 hours of television. And so to see him so beat up, near death, okay with death,
right,
and then tell that story, and you realize, wow, he actually would have had the right to play the victim card, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah, he was gone serving his country, doing what he thought was right, had everything taken away from him in the most heartbreaking way.
Right.
And he's never complained about it at this point. So I think it's so moving when he finally just, like, opens up.
Yeah.
You're like, oh gosh.
Well, and
man.
And the call, like, there are callbacks. Like, we started getting the penny and dime reference, I think, in episode 3, maybe in episode 2. But we find out that that's part of the children's story, which is, like, another kind of heartbreaking element of this. But also, like, you think back to the conversation on the rooftop where Matt is so frustrated with him that he's almost mocking him. Like, he's like, oh, did you lose somebody? Like, guess what? Everybody lost someone. Like, you, that doesn't give you the right.
Yeah, he literally says, oh, boo-hoo.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, on the one hand, yeah, that doesn't give you the right to go start, like, murdering people in the streets. But on the other hand, like, you see Matt replaying that conversation now that they're in the graveyard and realizing, like, that he also, like, he was projecting so much of his own doubt about his role as Daredevil onto Frank. Like, again, Frank was very much deserving of criticism for what he's doing. I'm not saying that, like, Matt was wrong, but it's like Matt is such a, like, one of the things that's made that character so fascinating is the Catholic guilt idea and the way that they play that out over and over again, where it's like, Spider-Man is always carrying this kind of responsibility, but Daredevil is always carrying, like, guilt. And this is, like, a great way of showing that.
And by the way, to have a character that's this religious is really special, I think. Like, again, finding ways to make these characters unique.
Yeah.
We don't have this.
Yeah.
So the way he, again, attends, like, the funeral of Grotto.
Yep. Which is another one of my high points.
Even though Grotto's a horrible dude. Yeah, and then the conversation again with Father Lantham is, like, it's special.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that I had the funeral scene written down as my high point here before I realized that we got the graveyard scene in this episode, and then that topped it. But the funeral, like, the sermon is great. The conversation that they have afterwards, like what you're talking about, where they're kind of Matt's confronting that head on, and, like, it's,
yep.
I mean, this episode, just top to bottom, is incredible. Like,
And it totally could have been the end of the show.
Yes, yes. Even the way it brings everything together. Like I said, like, all the little callbacks.
It does.
It's like it all, even
you,
like,
get the huge theme musically.
Yep. And yeah, the first time we see Matt and Karen.
And you could have been like, oh, Matt's actually happy, and he's, like, finding a way to... I think one of the beauty things of that is that Matt just had this really moving story told to him about family and this guy's daughter and wife.
Uh-huh.
And then he has that special, like, reframing of his emotional side of things because of that.
Right.
With Karen and Foggy.
Right.
And it's, like, a really special moment.
Yeah. I
don't know. It's like Matt's seeing things through a different lens because of the villain.
Yeah.
Which is what we always want.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's what we always want.
That's true. That's what we've like praised Black Panther for doing. Yeah, I think.
And then it immediately gets screwed up with the Elektra tag.
Man, I'm so curious to see how my thoughts on this change. I think based on memory, you and I feel differently about Elektra. I agree with you about the hand, which I know is hard to separate from Elektra, but I actually enjoy that actor's work here, and I like that relationship more than I like Matt and Karen's in this series.
Okay.
So,
oh, I love it. We're going to get to it.
So I'm excited to debate that. But for that reason, that to me, like I almost just read it, like because it's so funny that we were both viewing this as like one complete arc. I just read that basically as a post-credit scene. Like it feels so similar to like the Iron Man 1 post-credit scene that it didn't really like work against anything we had seen.
So my memory tells me that my two least favorite things about the entire series, the hand, like you said, like so many ninjas, just too many ninjas, one. And then two, I'm going to pair two things together. Like, I don't love Matt and Karen getting romantically involved, even though I just said, no, it's a beautiful moment. It's a cool moment, but like this kicks off this love triangle thing that represents my second least favorite thing in the show. And it's not even just the writing. It's partially the performances, and it's partially what they're trying to tell me about Matt as a character. Now, I know from you telling me the comics background that Matt was kind of a player
right.
in the comics and right. was a ladies' man, and we haven't gotten a lot of that, which, by the way, is another reason why if we get some of that in She-Hulk, don't be shocked, everybody.
Right.
I don't love how they go about it with the triangle thing.
Yeah.
Like my memory serves me that he kind of all of a sudden falls head over heels with Karen, like at the end of this. It's like this super moving, like I found my life partner moment.
Right.
And then literally, if I remember right, like two or three episodes from now, he'll be like totally back Team Elektra. And like abandons Karen in this season, if I remember right. Just like totally leaves her. And I don't love that they're trying to set up, again, if he's like sleeping around, that's different to me than setting up like him finding this like permanent relationship with Karen to immediately just betray it. And I think that between this and a few things in season three, it like takes some of the compassion that Matt has as a character that makes him so special and just gets rid of some of that. And I don't love that. Like my wife gets finished with all three Daredevil seasons. And she says like, I don't like Matthew that much.
Wow.
Like she wishes she was more drawn to him as a character. She's not saying she doesn't like Charlie Cox.
Right.
She's not saying she doesn't like the writing. She's not saying she doesn't like the disagreement between him and Kingpin. It's none of that. It's just like she's not like emotionally brought in to Matthew because he's kind of a jerk to his friends and because of this love triangle. And I don't know. That's how I remember it. So I'm hoping it's a little bit different from this point on. Do you understand what I'm saying at least?
No, I totally do. And I'm really – I mean that'll be such a great conversation I think for this next group of episodes because like it's been so long since I've seen these that it's almost like we've kind of swapped roles here where I obviously know
how the
whole season ends as a whole, but like I remember what they were trying to do more than I remember how they actually execute it. So like in theory, I actually like the idea of basically we have a Matt Murdock love interest and a Daredevil love interest. And I think that's an interesting idea. Like, it's like, okay, because Matt is two people.
Okay,
like
that's
Matt's
fair.
Like, you know, Matt's the conscientious lawyer and friend, but he's also this reckless, violent, like, unpredictable vigilante, you know? So, like, and you can see how each of those characters would fit in with each of those sides of his personality. So I like the idea, but I can't remember how well it's actually executed. So I'm excited to get to that.
My very last note, then I'm done for this episode. I want you to keep an eye on this, okay, before our next episode. I think one of the biggest missteps of this show and this season in particular is how long they draw out the Karen not knowing the Daredevil thing for.
Yeah. Okay.
I think one of the least realistic things about this show is that Matt is always gone when they're going through the most trauma, right? Like the whole grotto thing that's so traumatizing. Right. Matt's right. just taking a sick right. day. Right. Then they like, right. it's right. like happened multiple times where she goes over to Matt's house. He's on a sick day. He's got bruises and cuts and everything. And she's like, what's going on, man? You got to tell me what's going on. It's like, Karen, right. use your brain and start brainstorming. Have you ever seen Daredevil and Matt in the same room? Daredevil magically showed up and saved your one life out of 20 million people in New York every time in season one, right? Now, Matt is gone whenever the stuff's happening and you can't figure it out. And you visit Matt again and you think he's stumbling into doors. Okay, if they had ended it right here, like four episodes in, he tells her, like, Karen, I got to tell you something, blah, blah, blah. I'd be like, that makes total sense. Like, she's on to him.
Yeah.
Share.
Yeah.
But just as a reminder, the season ends with him telling her. So you're going to go 9 more episodes with them dragging that out. I'm just warning you. Guys, we get it. You care about the identity part of this. But come on. You're now making me suspend belief that Karen has no brain to put this together.
That's a good point. Okay, I will be on the lookout for that. The last two things I was going to say, and it's funny because this sort of connects back to the Dark Knight thing. There were two moments in this episode that I feel like kind of those sequel things we were saying, but that I also like. The first one, which is very Dark Knight, is this, like, you have to tell everybody that you brought him in because it can't be me. Like, we have to, the truth has to be what we say it is.
So kind of true. Thing. What a parallel.
So Dark Knight. And then the second one is, this is where we see him get a costume upgrade. And I will say, like, in The Dark Knight, I appreciate that they explain why the costume's different. Like in the same way that Batman has to change so he can turn his head. Here we see he has to get a, you know, better set of armor. And we already talked about the, like, vulnerabilities in the other one earlier. But I also like the redesign. I think that this is my favorite version of the Daredevil suit proper that we get in the Netflix series to date. Not counting the all black look, but just like the actual armored look.
This is your fault because you got me thinking about this and we have to wrap this up. But seriously, one of the greatest cinematic endings ever, The Dark Knight, ever in the history of film. That conversation with Gordon, the Joker can't win. And then Gordon's son's there. He's like, I can be those things.
And the Zimmer score.
Yeah, and the Zimmer score starts paying. And then I have chills right now. Like, as it's flashing to Batman trying to escape injured, right, from the dogs, and he's rushing to his motorcycle, right. et cetera. Like, well, then we'll chase him because we have to. And then the twist on the, because he's not the hero we deserve, but the hero we need right now.
Right.
And then his son being, but he didn't do anything wrong. And then it flashes to him on the motorcycle. You know what I'm talking about? Like, literally, oh, I have chills. Like, one of the greatest endings to a movie.
Oh, it's incredible.
The Joker can't win. He can't win. Oh, dude, sorry.
Dude, Bale.
Wow. I'm so excited. Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. I went on like a rant the other day just about how Christian Bale, I actually don't think I've ever seen him turn in a bad performance. I recognize there are a lot of other things in play in this scene you were just describing, but like lately I've just been like, man, Bale is like something special.
I can do that. Yes.
Oh, man. What a fun start to our Daredevil season 2 coverage here.
Yeah. Another episode where we said, hey, let's just keep this short. We'll keep it tight because we've talked about this. And then here we go. One of our longer episodes in the last few weeks.
Especially on Friends for Work Plus. So the way this is going to work is we will have one part of season 2 a month for the next 3 months. So in September, we'll come back with season 2 part 2, and then we'll close out season 2 in October, right in time to close out She-Hulk. And then we'll kind of be in full swing getting ready for Wakanda Forever, but also Werewolf by Night and the Guardians Holiday Special, and who knows what other kind of fun stuff pops up, as well as some For Friends From Work Plus Comics Corner stuff a la Hickman Avengers. So a lot of fun stuff coming, but if you are trying to pace your Daredevil rewatch, that's about the pace that we're going to be going at. So you have about a month or so, 3 weeks to get the next 4 or 5 episodes in. We'll also put out the exact episodes we'll be covering ahead of time so that you'll know.
I am recording this in my new Friends from Work Thor Love and Thunder shirt. So hopefully everyone out there has theirs now. It's comfortable. It looks dope. And I hope you're enjoying it. That's all I wanted to say. We know you guys already love subscribed that to this podcast because you're Friends from Work Plus people. You're our favorite people. Well, we love all people, but you know, wink, wink, wink. You're special to us. Thank you so much for your support. We love you guys. We'll see you next time on Friends from Work Plus.